is a very special day. Today is the day when His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, took sannyas for a very great mission. I arrived at this topic. I have one of our old devotee students from Pune who is currently abroad. He is in San Jose. So we had a kind of interaction between the two regarding Spiritual Scientist magazine. So this boy had written that in Spiritual Scientist you are criticizing science so much. You know, ISKCON may lose grounds. Be careful. Students will not come if you are too much criticizing science. We are using so many facilities of science and things like that. And then there was a long debate and discussion, which inspired me to bring up this topic for debate today. Mother Teresa once made a statement. She said, when I see the poor people of Calcutta, still I am able to find a great ray of happiness in their face and eyes. But when I see the people of America, their eyes are looking poverty-stricken, despite having all comforts and luxuries presented by the modern science. Often it is thought that because science is offering so many comforts and facilities to us, there is a great following for science. But if one carefully observes with good intelligence, we can see sometimes a child, you know, makes a paper boat and puts it in a big tub. And when the paper boat floats in the tub, he thinks, oh, I have done something very great. But what he doesn't know are the big ships that are floating in the Atlantic Ocean. Similarly, modern man with his monkeying technology, he has found out many things by which he may send satellites around the earth, around some planets, and these are insignificant compared to the huge planets that have been floating for millions of years, not yesterday or today. So we had a discussion like this about Vedas and science. So he was telling me that now we are able to keep in touch through email. That is only because science is so advanced. So we are able to contact back and forth so nicely. I said, if scientific advancement hadn't taken place, then you will be sitting in my lecture in my front. You won't be so far away. Also, I wrote to him that let's take a simple example instead of going here and there. I told him a simple example. Let's take one thing that has replaced something of the Vedic times. Like the bull of the Vedic times is replaced by a tractor in the modern times. Just take one example of a tractor. To make this tractor, you need an iron and steel industry to produce tractors. So naturally, because the iron and steel industry are going to be pollution. Not only that, you need paint industry for painting the different parts of the tractor. So there is again pollution due to paints. Then you need gasoline for running the tractor. Then if you need gasoline, you have to get it from the Gulf, so you need aeroplanes. Then you need the aeronautics industry for making the aeroplanes. And then you transport the gasoline from there to here. And then when you use the gasoline, there is again pollution. There is air pollution. Then you need a rubber industry for making the tires. And when tire is burnt, you know how poisonous it is. But of course, the tire companies are not going to avoid burning. They have times when they have to burn and they will pollute the air. Just like we have radioactive industries which pretty well know that its health hazard is still they use. Because they want to make money. You can't stop them. So there is a rubber industry. And there is also furnishing industries. So we can go on adding to the list like this. Even after having all these things, now the tractor is produced with all the air pollution, water pollution and everything. There are things that add to this. Like the bull will be sent to the slaughterhouse. And besides that, because because the tractor works very fastly, man tends to become very greedy. That he would plow the field very fastly, but the field is not capable of producing as fast as he wants it to produce. The producer will come in, say, 6 months or 1 year, but he wants it in 1 month, so that he can again plow it again and use it for the second time. Then he becomes very impersonal and mechanical. So in order to speed up the earth to give produce, he has to make some artificial fertilizers. So he makes artificial fertilizers which burns the surface of the earth and renders it completely barren after some time. After 2-3 years, it will become barren. It won't be giving any more yield. Then he finds out, is there any way by which we can have some terrace lands so we can produce more? He has to go for again and again some other idea. So he breaks his head, and then there is no food, because we have only done all these things to the earth. Not only that, when tractors come, they do the very fast job. So many men become unemployed, farmers' sons. So they play cards. They go for playing gambling. If you see, you go to the villages and tractors come, it replaces 20 men. Each man does the tractor work. All other people go for playing gambling or indulging in all kinds of abominable activities. And then overall culture degrades. So I had just written this example which came to my mind, that how just to make one tractor, how man has to break his head. See, the advancement in scientific technology appears very lucrative. It's very appealing to the mind. But if one pays little attention carefully, you will easily see that we have put a big burden on our own heads. Once a dog was jumping here and there and creating a lot of problem. So the owner of the dog put 2 logs of wood on him, either side of the dog, hanging from a rope, so that he just cannot move. The dog was feeling very proud. I have a medal now. He's put a medal around my neck. He's very proud of that medal hanging from his shoulder. Our condition is like that. We are very proud of our modern scientific advancement. How there's 2 logs of wood hanging from our necks, which is choking our throats. That's the condition. So I wrote to him, and he was telling, why do you say that we are making best of the bad bargain with the advancement of science? Actually, we are doing exactly what is to be done with modern science. Why do you call it best of bad bargain? Then I told him that actually, if all these things were not there, the advancement of science, if it hadn't happened, then man would have lived much happier. For example, now, man has, because of the advancement of science, man has left the countryside and he has come to the suburbs. He's coming to the cities now. So when he has come to the city, naturally, he has to construct concrete jungle, he has to make a concrete jungle there. He builds up so many buildings. Then he needs milk, so milk has to be transported through milk vans. Then he needs vegetables, so they have to be transported from the countryside to the city. Then he needs water for drinking. Then there are long pipes that come from countryside, rivers. It comes to the city, you have to bring the water like that. And also there are big trucks carrying cattle for slaughterhouses. So all these things are coming to the city. One by one, everything has to be brought to the city. So city is thickly populated with people, and you have to get everything from the village. And you need a lot of transport. More transport means more vehicles. More vehicles means more pollution. And more iron and steel industries. All kinds of industries. Which automobile industries and everything. In this way, man has made his own life very complicated. All that we can be proud of to raise our colors is that, like the dog, we are very proud, we are very advanced. Science has given us comfort. So I asked him, tell me, are you the body or the soul? If I were the soul, I would try to become the number one sense gratifier in the whole world. I would go to extreme ends of the world and try to squeeze out the best possible happiness, if only I were the body. But if one thinks he's the body, he's sadly mistaken. You're not the body. So this kind of tussle between Vedas and science has been going on from time immemorial. To put it more precisely, instead of calling it Vedas and science, we can call it a competition between those who seek flickering immediate pleasures and those who seek long-term, durable, everlasting bliss. So this is actually the question. What do we want? I'm very sure many of you in your discussion must have spoken this point. The science is offering us so many comforts. Science is offering so many comforts for the body. If one carefully analyzes the nature of God's creation and nature of what science has created, certainly science has very nicely imitated nature to a very great extent, but not perfectly imitated. You see, the mosquito can go round and round. It is so tiny, it's like a tiny flight. Goes round and round and sits on the tip of a needle. It doesn't need any runways, nor does it need any crash preventers. Just like a big aeroplane like that. This is God's creation. When you see a beautiful painting, you may appreciate the painting because the brush has done it. But the brush is used as an instrument by the intelligent artist who has drawn it. So those who are very flawless, they always go to the ultimate truth instead of seeing the immediate instrument. Even when scientists produce many wonderful things, and the very flawless are never bewildered. Because they know, even an atheist, in order to argue against God, he is provided some brain substance by God. Because soul is sincerely deciding that I want to become an atheist. Please God, give me some argument so that I can argue against Vedic scholars. Okay, take this argument. Paramatma very mercifully gives him, okay, take it. Because you are so adamantly wanting, okay, I'm giving you, take it. So, matta, sate jnanam apohanam cha, it is said in Bhagavad Gita. So, while the followers of science only see the immediate things, the Vedic followers see things which are beyond, which are just like we often talk about the symptomatic and pathological. You will see the immediate things that you see with your eyes. But we have to go beyond and see, one can see the ultimate truth. This is one of the essential differences between Vedic approach and modern approach. We talk of, today specifically I mentioned the word authority. It is not just Vedas and science, we are saying Vedic authority and scientific authority, whom to follow. When we talk of authority, it's very important that we decide to follow the right authority. Otherwise, we will simply be like blind men being led by another blind man, and all will fall into the ditch. Andayatandai Rupaniyamana Taipishadantyam Urdhavipanta. Everyone falls into the ditch. So, on one hand, the science is saying so many things that we have found out, that everything comes from a big bang. Your ancestor was a monkey. And then we have produced so many comforts using this theory and that theory, everything. So you follow us. Just accept everything. There is no God in control. There is nothing. There is no foundation. This is our truth. You accept us. On the other hand, the Vedas also is giving us a call. Come, here is the truth. You follow us. This is God. This is the world. So both science and religion, they are looking at the world around us and giving a particular type of interpretation. I ask us to accept their authority. In the Vedas it is said, the supreme truth is Adokshaja. Adha means push down. Akshaja means those things which are perceived by our eyes. So Adokshaja means that truth which is so great that it simply pushes down all other lower truths that are seen with eyes, smelled with ears, tasted with the tongue, touched with skin, or heard with ears. It pushes down everything else. So that truth is actually the supreme truth. And Vedas claim, if you read the Vedic literatures, that here is the truth. And this is the way the truth is. And they are very authoritative. The Vedas are very confident in what they say. They have no any doubt about what they are saying. Nor have they ever amended any of the truths till now, what was said long, long ago, millions of years ago. So when you look at both science and Vedas, whom should we accept? All of us, we all have been educated in schools and colleges, and we have spent so many years. One strong observation we can make, that in the field of science, there are so many theories that are established, taught, and discarded, just like disposable napkins that a mother uses. And what I am saying is, no not something uncommon. At every point, science undergoes a change. Somebody has said, the human seasons are changing, so science can change. And that is a sentimental argument, which carries no weight. When we talk of change, we are actually talking of an authority whom we can follow. Just imagine if somebody tells you, come to college, this is engineering college, we award you a 4-year mechanical engineering degree, we offer you. And you go and join the college, they say, no, it's art college. I will give you only BCom. If somebody changes their words like that, can you put faith in them? What will happen to your future? This is the condition of science. The changes in science have not brought about anything very positive. All the changes in science that have happened have led to many disasters. I'll tell you, for example, in 1930, the scientists in the research group of Coca-Cola company made an announcement for advertising Coca-Cola. They said, the cocaine that is available in this Coca-Cola reduces depression and it makes you hale and healthy. This was in 1930, advertised. But now, everyone knows the danger of cocaine. In Singapore, if anybody is found to be carrying more than 10 grams of cocaine, he's given death sentence. Do you know that? They're given death sentence if you carry even more than 10 grams of cocaine. It is found to be so health hazardous. So what was once upon a time thought of to be reducing depression and giving you a healthier body and healthier mind is now proved to be fatal. It will cause you death. That means scientists can even convince you to eat something that is poison, telling that it is nectar. This is the kind of untruth that can be propagated as truth. During the Vietnam War, when there were many college students who were opposing, they were rebelling against the superiors. So they were given many drugs at that time to keep them calm, so that they won't create any trouble. But after eating those drugs, the students got a taste of it. And then the drug addiction started in a big way all over the world. Today, drug peddling is one of the greatest businesses all over the world, and which causes the greatest loss to the countries worldwide. And nobody is able to control it. They say if one student leaves, if a drug addict student, he leaves one city like Bombay and comes to Pune, even the drug peddling owners and the companies, they trace him and find him and they come and supply him drugs. Because they know very well that he's like a money making machine. They can make a lot of money from him. Once a person becomes drug addict, he just can't get out of it. So this was actually proposed by educated people, that you give them drugs and they'll keep quiet. They'll be happy. So in this way, I can give innumerable examples of things that have been constantly changed in the field of science. Things to the extent of cosmic yardsticks have been changed. That means according to scientists, the planet's distances keep changing. They're near, they are far, and there is life and there is no life in the planets. And also, many people argue that science proposes theories which are proven in the laboratories through experiments. The most fundamental theories of science have never been proved in the laboratory. The most fundamental theory is that the origin of universe and origin of life have never been shown, never been proved. You see, truckloads of information can be given about the fossils that are dug from the earth. You can show the skulls, you can show this bone, you can show that bone. And maybe this is ostrich. I'm not joking, they have made one Ramapati, because there is one particular monkey. They have named us Ramapati. So they give such a word, jugglery, which makes you think probably they are true. They give such volumes and volumes of information. Just like today, if you see in TV, you know, they have this Discovery Channel, isn't it? And they give such nice music. They can even make you believe that Earth is a cube, if they want to make you believe. You just make Earth into a cube and you say some scientific jargon and you rotate it this way, that way, and show that it's a cube, and everyone will believe it. Anyway, the truth, the untruth is presented today. And adding it along with the technology, with sound effect, with color effect, everything, anything can be presented as truth. Of course, if one wants to believe such untruths as truths, and go ahead, one can go ahead. That is why I said there are two things. Do you want flickering pleasures that will give you some temporary enjoyment and it will be gone? Or do you want happiness that can never be taken away from you? I was thinking, instead of pursuing in this way, giving argument, I would rather take the questions and answer them one by one, so that all the points which you all have been arguing would be covered here. No? Vedic knowledge received by ears, which are imperfect. See, often people think if knowledge is handed over from one person to another, it may be something like Chinese whispers, you know, Chinese whispers. Like I tell you one thing and you tell him another thing and he tells him another thing. Usually by the time it goes to the last person, it will be something else. All get totally changed. The Vedic scholars were not fools. They knew such things could happen. That is why, even when the truth is handed over through hearing from one person to another person, there are three things: Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. There are three evidences. First, the Guru should be in good standing, as the Vedas are saying, and the Shastras, which are written down scriptures, revealed scriptures, and the Sadhus are also other Acharyas coming in the line. All these three things should match. One of them something can be accepted as truth. So I'll give you a simple example. Say, the word Saindava. Saindava has two meanings. Saindava means salt. Saindava also means horse. Say, now I'm eating my prasad and I'm asking you, please bring some Saindava. So what will you bring? Will you bring a horse and put it in my plate? So the Vedic truths are as clear as that. They're crystal clear. So you cannot hide a watermelon into your hands, can you? The Vedic truths are like that. The Vedic truths are so clear cut that there is no ambiguity in them. It's so clear cut. So even when you see the truth, it is so clear, and then you're confirming it from the Guru, and then there are three Acharyas who say the same thing, and the Shastras are written down. So by seeing a match of all these things, one can very easily understand that the Vedic truths never change. That it is not the ear that hears. This is simply covering for the ears. Where is the ear? Is the ear from the ear? No. Even that is not the ear. The ear is actually in the subtle body. In the subtle body, there are five sensory perceptions in the subtle body originally. And what you have, these external things and all are simply components of the gross body. So when it goes to the subtle body, who is the real hearer? Can anybody say? Yes? Who is the real hearer? Soul. Soul is the hearer. So when the knowledge is being spoken, the real hearer is the soul. Soul has got his own individual set of senses. His eyes and ears and nose and everything. That is why it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana. The Swakata means the Lord is also situated as Paramatma in our heart. He is hearing his own kata. Like all of us are hearing about Krishna, for example. So it goes through your ears and it reaches the soul, and also it reaches the super soul also. And the super soul is watching, and this person, the soul, hearing about the Lord. How sincerely is he hearing? How attentively is he hearing? How much is he applying in his life? Based on all these things, he enlightens him from within. So the knowledge is not imposed from without, it is enlightened from within. That is the way the Vedic knowledge is revealed. We can quote so many verses to show this. Prakashanti Mahatmana. What is the meaning of it was? Yasya Deve Parabhaktir, Yata Deve Tathaguru, Tasyete Katita Hyarta, Prakashanti Mahatmana. The Vedic truth is revealed in the heart of a person. Sincerely follows the heart of the spiritual master. Yasya Deve Parabhaktir. And he has complete faith in the Lord also. Vedic knowledge is not given, but it is revealed in the heart. Then you may ask, then what is the thing that is being given to us? So that is given to convince us, you bow down to God, you chant God's name, and this is the right path. You are just put in the right track, that's all. But then every one of us is individual. We all can go in the right track and come to a stage where the truth will be revealed in us. Ajnana jantamaya. I eradicate the darkness in the heart of the soul. You see, Prabhupada said, when he went to America and he was speaking, his English was so broken. His English was highly accented by Bengali. So many could not understand exactly what Prabhupada is saying. But they were convinced that this man is a lover of God. And he has come to teach us something valuable, not a cheater. Conviction also comes from the soul only. So by associating with him, gradually they heard, they read, and they did service to Krishna. Sevan mukhehi jihvadav svayameva svratyada. Again the same point. The knowledge about God is revealed when one renders service. It is not achieved simply by mechanical hearing or by any scholarship. In fact, on the contrary, it is said, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labdhyo Namedhaya Nabhunashatena. It is said, Vedic knowledge is not assimilated in the heart of a person simply by medhaya, by intelligence, or by scholarship, or by even giving pravachans. You cannot understand the Vedic truths. So the Vedic truths are not just heard through these ears, they are actually revealed from the heart. In Vedic times, no proper medicines, only jadi bhuti. Therefore, people died. So therefore, I think the old age disease, death, all these problems were there before, he is saying. You see, I heard, I can tell you some examples. One example is, you all know the skin disease, what do they call it? The skin disease, you know, where you have some portions of the skin which are whitish, you know. Huh? Eczema? Eczema is something dermite comes to think skin. Nicoderma, yeah. So, this disease, our Saurav can say, is there any cure for it? Saurav? Huh? Every again it comes back, isn't it? Yeah. So, allopathic doctor is assuring it. But I can take you to a doctor who can cure it, who is an Ayurvedic doctor. So he has a jadi bhuti. If you continue to apply jadi bhuti for just 2 to 3 months, it will disappear. So that is the medicine in Ayurveda, available like that. Similarly, if you break your bones, if you go to South India, in Kerala, there is a Keralia massage, Keralia treatment is there. So people who are told that your leg has to be removed and you have to replace it with some stainless steel, leg or with a wooden thing, you have to replace it like that. For such people, they did the massaging and they have cured their legs and they are walking normally. Just using jadi bhuti, which is mentioned here. Jadi bhuti. Vedic medicines are only jadi bhuti. There are people who drank poison and they were taken to allopathic hospitals. And they have a poison level. How much poison level you have, Sarab? Beyond which you cannot save a person. There is some limit beyond which a person takes poison, then a person cannot be recovered, you'll be finished. But the jadi bhuti is by taking which the poison in the entire body can be sucked and can be thrown out in the form of stool and urine, and the person's life can be saved. Even Lakshman was given jadi bhuti by Hanuman, isn't it? God the Sanjeevani. Hanuman was practically dead. See, there is a Mrita Sanjeevani mantra which is administered along with the jadi bhuti. Where people who have just died can be recovered again, the soul can be brought back into the body. Of course, somebody may say, oh, these techniques are not available now, it is only in paper theory. But the first few which I told you are something realizable. So, certainly there is a wing researching in India, wondering how the field of Ayurveda is able to cure certain things which are practically incurable using the modern medicines. Like that. Like I personally had experience, at one time I had a chronic constipation. And a chronic constipation means your stomach becomes like a stone. Practically like a stone. You just don't feel hungry at all. And you don't clear the stomach, the constipation becomes chronic. Chronic means it is practically lasting practically every day. So I took many allopathic medicines. So when you take medicines, it will get diarrhea kind of thing. Everything will be thrown out. And again after 4 or 5 days, again back to square A. Again your stomach becomes a stone. And you just can't eat anything. So I wasn't eating for several days. I went to so many doctors, so many people consuming it. And afterwards, I thought maybe besides allopathic, let me also try some Ayurvedic. In Ayurvedic, I understood the mechanism when I went to the Ayurveda. Understood that if there is Prakriti that is explained, and it's a very long story, but I can tell you very briefly that if one eats things which are not suiting to one's body, and if there is no proper digestion, because of lack of digestion, what happens? There is something called as aam that is created. This aam is a substance which permeates the whole body. It goes to different senses. It enters into all the 7 dhatus. There are 7 dhatus, bringing from the Kapha, Majja, Medha, bone, marrow, flesh, and bone, virya, rakta, there are seven dhatus. So it begins from the lowest dhatu and enters gradually into inner dhatus. It goes into, it goes and clings, just like a glue, huh? And it permeates the whole body. Over a period of time, one feels completely weak, very, very weak, because it's on spreading in the whole body. You just can't do any work. If you do half an hour work, you'll you know, when it tested this level in my body, it had gone worse. And 2 months they had to massage it with oil and remove all the arm in different places and bring it to the gastrointestinal tract and then vomit it out and also to throw it out through different treatment. So when I read it, I understood that if I had just taken allopathy treatment, we don't know how to become a pretty old man by 40 years. In 40 years I will have to be holding a stick because of this. Things would have gone very worse. Chemotherapy treatment. Here they gave a treatment in 2 months. Now I'm again back. Back at my healthy body now. So this is Ayurvedic. Able to move about and work very hard. Practically sleep already 12 o'clock. Of course, doctor told not to sleep so late. But the point is, again, one can regain complete health by Ayurveda. There are many books written on total health. You should read them. See, allopathic treatment afterwards. Everything, like a cigarette or a liquor. Similarly, you have whatever pain you have, take Brufen. Brufen, even a child knows nowadays. Even a small child will know. If you have any pain, you take Brufen. So 400 is not working after some time because, you know, it loses its power. Then you go for 800 or 1000 or even more. Like they keep on increasing the time. So, Vedic times, the Ayurveda may appear to be, the Jadi Bhuti may appear very primitive. But now, the foreign countries are recognizing the value of Ayurveda so much that they are now coming to India and studying. Recently, a week ago, one girl has come from Spain. She's from Spain and she's studying in London. She's studying Ayurveda. And she has come to camp to do 3 months apprenticeship in India for Ayurveda. And she said, there are masses of people. They are very eager to learn Ayurveda. Her college is flooded with students. So she has come now to Pune for staying 3 months to learn practical Ayurveda here. So why are foreigners coming here to learn Ayurveda if it has no meaning? Of course, Ayurveda takes time. It doesn't cure immediately, just like spiritual life takes time. When you see Krishna Chaitanya immediately, then you cannot go back to Goloka tomorrow. Things take time. But although things take time, they bring forth long enduring result, which can never be taken away from you. Whereas, modern treatment, everyone knows, gulp down so many tablets, carrying bag fulls of tablets, different colored tablets, morning some 25-30 and just like eating prasad. I used to wonder what is the use of keeping the body and bones and flesh together like that, simply consuming so much of medicine. You can only say that I'm still alive, that's all. I'm bedridden, but I'm alive. See, like one lady was doing dialysis. She had a poisonous blood. Because of which, every 15 or 20 days, she has to completely exhaust all the blood. And they would replace it with new blood. So, a lot of expenditure. Of course, the modern science has done a miracle that, you know, by replacing with the new blood, she can survive for another 15 days. And after 15 days, again, they would throw away the old blood. Because again, it becomes contaminated. They put a new blood like that. Although she got new blood, she cannot move from her bed. She has to be bedridden. What would they do in the Vedic times? In Vedic times, artificially, they would never try to hold the life of a person. That has never been, because body was understood to be just a vehicle for which you can get a replacement always. Throw away the old body and get a new body. Vasansa jenani yata vihaya. Actually, the body should be utilized for service to God. If the body is not used like that and the body is getting old and the blood is getting contaminated, one has to die. One can leave the body. What is the problem? One need not hold the life by putting, you know, tubes into the nose and trying to hold on the life like that. That's a big subject. Sometimes we can discuss on euthanasia and mercy killing and everything. It will come under that. But the point is, the modern times they are trying to hold on the life of a person and keep make him a vegetable in ICU for 15 years. Which is actually of no use. You can only say that my grandfather is still alive for the past 15 years and he spent 15 lakhs for him. But he does nothing. He's just in ICU all the time. He doesn't know where he's lying also. your life and keeping you holding for some more time. That's why there was a sensible wording which said, man has made life longer but not happier. It really makes sense. Because we prolong our life, but you cannot go beyond the quantum of happiness that is allotted to you. So he's saying people are getting old age, disease and death. What about now? Don't you grow old now? Are you not getting death now? Have you conquered all diseases? There was an article in a paper called Resurrection of All the Old Diseases. Resurgence of All the Diseases. I have the article even now. We published the article in Spiritual Scientist. But they say all the diseases that went away 10 years ago are coming back with full force again. Because, you know, consuming antibiotics and suppressing a disease temporarily will certainly make it burst out and come later in some other form. And that's happening already. So many diseases are coming back again. Now you have conquered 12 later diseases, now you've got 26 later diseases now. That's what we have done. Old order changes, yielding place to new. What the other said. Old things are gone, now a new thing has come. Just like, you know, tiger-like prime minister is gone, now a lion has come. Similarly, old diseases are gone, now they have come back with the new diseases, which are far more dangerous. There is no cure. Anybody can tell answer this question. Anybody knows a disease for which there is no cure? Right? See, everyone knows. So immediately, even a child can say, AIDS has no cure. Everyone knows that. See, when we say there is no cure, it's not that, you know, scientists are not getting enough time to allot time for the project of finding out a medicine for AIDS, you know. They are too busy with their other activities. Not like that. Hundreds and thousands of doctors are burning the midnight oil, working on finding out a cure for AIDS. Do you know that? Worldwide? And research is not going on for the past 1 year, it has been going on for several years. Almost a decade. What is going on? But now, Maya has shown her. What now? She's asking. See, now you have to bow down to God. If you don't bow down to God, this is the way I'll kick on your face. And you will die within no time. You will just catch cold, and the cold will be the cause of your death. Because you will lose all your immunity. You will lose immunity to such an extent that you cannot even fight against cold. Common cold. This is the condition of the disease. See, if you are very proud of our advancement, why can't you boost up the immunity of a person and save his life, a person having AIDS? You cannot even stop a person dying out of common cold. This is the advancement we have made. And we are criticizing Jerry Booty. Embryology. Embryology and about atoms. Only information and not method to prove hence has produced instruments. See, in Srimad Bhagavatam there is a detailed information about Vedic embryology, human embryology. And here is saying that the modern scientists have found out instruments to, you know, like sonography or you have instruments by which you can know what's exactly happening in the stomach or in the womb of a mother like that. Why Vedic people didn't do that? Are they fools? Are they couldn't invent such machines? Again, coming back to the root point, the goal is very important. So they never lost track of the goal. The goal is to go back home, back to Godhead. And whatever is anukulyasya sankalpa, we say, no? Krishna anushilanam. Krishna anushilanam means do those things which are favorable for ultimately returning back home, back to Godhead. Like now they had a bullock cart. Why didn't they invent a horseless carriage, like a car or a bus or anything else? They're not having enough intelligence. They knew very well that when you have a bullock cart, there is no pollution. And also it is slow. Prabhupada writes in one of his purports that in America, people go at such breakneck speeds in wide roads that if one vehicle goes wrong, if the tire bursts in one vehicle, 50 to 100 vehicles will get an accident. That is why the death rate due to accidents is maximum in America, if you see, than the people who are naturally dying. But these things are never told to us, because these things are not good news. One of the good news is told to you. All the horrible things that are going on will never be told to us. So inside the car, the living entity is sitting and driving all the time in tension. Anytime anything can happen. Even today, you can see in India, just a couple of days ago, news came to me that some people passing, they were going in a sumo, practically 10 people died in a sumo accident, hit against a sumo. Now, we are going very fast and we are reaching the other places very fastly. Bombay can reach in 2.5-3 hours now, so fastly. Although we are going so fast, you can also very fast. You heard about the train accident. What was the train? Rajdhani Express. You saw the photograph of the train which is crossing through the bridge and falling. And how many people died in that? 120 people. Mind you, Rajdhani people doesn't carry ordinary people. Rajdhani is complete air conditioned. So all those 120 people must be millionaires traveling in that. So 120 families have lost their people. But Vedic times we never hear of such news that so many people die in some accident. Bullock was going and 100 people died, you know. We don't hear of such news. Actually, anything they do, they always think twice. They would advance very fastly if they ever wanted. But there is no need. Why do you have to run around like this from one place to another place? Everything is available. There is bull to plow your field, so you are getting paddy and wheat right behind your house. And cow is sitting right in your backyard, giving milk. So you are having milk, you are having wheat, you are having paddy. And there is barter system. Anything you want through barter system you can exchange within the village. Relatives would never go so far like going to America that you need a phone to call them, ISD. You never need it. They are all with you, joint family. Everyone is with you. So what is the need of all this? Actually, Vedic life means never to make your life complex. If you complicate your life, then you will suffer more and more. That is why our life has become so complicated in the modern times that people are suffering from stress. Stress is such a terrible disease. All the religious organizations have given invitation to come to companies and teach them how to reduce stress. How does the stress come? Because your mental life complex. So, like he is telling about embryology, they were never interested. Actually, begetting children was a very normal thing. Like a husband, wife, unite and the child comes. They were never interested in dissecting the body and getting into the details of every thing in the body. Because Ayurveda gives a very simple explanation of the body. Kapha, Vata, Pitta, three things. If you know how they function, just like in the material world here, we have water and the lightning, fire and air. Air is for Vata, water is, the fire is Pitta, and the water is Kapha. So three things. Whatever is happening in the universe, same thing is happening within our stomach also, inside. Combination of the three. Ayurveda's explanation of the body is very simple. And also because people are living natural lives, applying Ayurveda would work also very fastly. But now life is becoming more and more complicated like this. See, why we quote in embryology often, they have given information, such a complex information that's going on within the body, even without having such sophisticated instruments what we have in the modern times. Only this. Otherwise, they never felt the need of such complicated instruments. See, today, man's life has become so complex that the diseases are also complex, more and more complex. And you also need more complex instruments to cure those diseases and diagnose those diseases. Otherwise, actually, we would never need such complex things. Comfort, most important. Intelligence was for comfort consciousness. So somebody has stressed on this aspect of comfort. So he is saying that science is giving comforts. That's why I don't know how many of you remember it, I was telling you. Scientists have given us a lollipop and stolen $1 million note away from us. So if somebody gives you a lollipop, will you give $1 million note to them? But that's what exactly they have done. See, they have pampered our bodies with some comforts, but they have taken us away from God. They have turned us about turn from God completely. Actually, if one observes more closely, you are not even enjoying the comforts which you are calling as comforts. If one carefully observes, comfort is considered a comfort by only fools, because it's actually not a comfort. Let us take a simple example. Say you have a cell phone. Now they say, get me anywhere. You must have seen the advertisement. Get me anywhere. That means even in the Latin also. You cannot even pass through peacefully. So you cannot even eat peacefully. Even while eating also. You don't have any private time at all to do anything. So one of our boys, when he got a job first, so he had a pager. So I told him, oh, this is fourth mode. You know, there are three modes of material nature, you know, isn't it? Prajagun, Prabhagun, Sattagun. This fourth mode to control you. So you have a pager, some people are so proud, they show the pager, I have a pager, my company has given me a pager. But what are they doing with that pager to you? They are catching you at the times when you don't want you to, want to be caught. There are times when they catch you. You want to be in a marriage ceremony of your sister or something, and then the call comes. Come, rush to company immediately. You have to rush immediately. So here thinking, comforts are comforts. There are many intelligent people who have understood that the so-called comforts have only increased our headache. Like one of a company told me that when he was earlier going in the car, he would hear audio tape. He would put audio tape and hear some kirtans. So he said, those were the golden days when cell phone came. I have lost my peace of mind. He carries cell phone, now he hears kirtan, and then when the call comes immediately, he puts off the catheter and he has to attend to the cell phone. And practically 20 calls come before he reaches his company. So in this way, he said, at that time I had a spiritual element in my life which was giving me peace of mind. Now that is lost now. Now also I am doing business in car, so due to which my mind is going crazy. So this is one example I am taking, just one cell phone. Similarly, you can talk with science. Although they appear to be doing good to us, every comfort comes with connected danger. There is no comfort that science offers you which has no danger associated with it. You know, I had a black and white monitor. Somebody said, why don't you have a color monitor? I also thought, yes, it's very nice to have a color monitor, you know, because when you make color pages and all, you can see the different colors, it'll be nice. But later again, you know, if you have a color monitor, you get color blind. But at the time of death, both health and wealth are gone. Both are finished. Everything is finished at death. So people in the Vedic times were really wise. See, they were, although they were soul-oriented, they never neglected the body also either. They took very good care of the body. We see, in our life when we go for Ayurveda, when we take care, we take so much care of the body. It's not that we never had comfort. It does offer the real comfort for the body, truly speaking. Because you know very well, early morning you take a cup of hot water. This is a prescription. And you will see your system works very well. You can take these leaves and take, don't eat this, eat this. And you do these things and see for yourself how it works. What should be not done in the evening, what should not be done in the night, what should be not only eating, sleeping, in which direction we should sleep. All these things are actually very scientific. If one wants to know, like, you know, we should not keep the head towards the north. Why? Because in the Himalayan mountains there's a magnetic wave that is going around the earth. So we don't keep our head towards the north. Because if you keep it, then you will see next day you'll get a severe headache. You can see that. That's why we sleep east to west. So everything that is given in the Vedas, the direction given is also for the healthy body. Healthy body, healthy mind, and healthy soul. Everything is taken. Modern times, you are given an illusion that you are having comforts around you. You are put into illusion. See, I have so much comforts. I have so many things to enjoy. And while enjoying them, gradually one realizes that one is put into so much trouble. So we just took two examples today, computer and cell phone. So now all of you go back and you think, what are all the comforts offered by science and what troubles I get? You can see for yourself. Like, you know, somebody may say, now you see, now we have motors that draw water. That you don't have to, you know, work very hard to draw water. Of course, you may escape, you know, moving your hand. That's what that boy had written, Ajit. And he wrote to me, he written to me that, you see, science wrote back to him, at the time of your birth, your pains and pleasures are decided. You just can't escape them. The quantum of pain and quantum of pleasures are already decided at the time of your birth. So it is only a question of in what form you want to experience the pain. Either in this form or that form, but you have to experience pain. Like for example, the modern times man has so many comforts, right? We have a cushioned bed. Actually man particularly doesn't do any activity. Like if you are living in the 20th floor of a building, you are lying down in a cushion bed, and then as soon as you come out of the house, there is a lift, no? And then you don't move your hands and legs. As soon as you get out of the lift, immediately there is a car awaiting, no? So sit in the car, and the consciousness, you go into, okay, there is hardly any movement, and then when you go into the company, you sit in the chair and computer, no? Like that. So because of lack of movement of hands and legs and no exercises, at later years one gets arthritis, where you have to move. So if you are supposed to move your hands, for drawing water 1,000 times in your life, so when you get old, doctor will tell you 1,000 times you do like this. So you have to do that, you can't escape it. So you'll do that, eventually you have to experience that pain in another form. So earlier you would have used that moving of hand for drawing water, now you are doing the same thing for the doctor's pleasure. So in this way, you are not actually escaping pain, you are only cheated that you are escaping pain. Okay, assuming that man has conquered all the pains that are coming in the body, what does the nature do, Maya? She says, oh, you have escaped from all the bodily movements, now I will take all the big quantum of pain and pressurize it, put it on your head, which is called as stress. Which is more severe, mental pain or physical pain? Mental pain. So if you have to suffer 100 quantum of physical pain, then 1 quantum of mental pain is enough. That is why in the modern times, what are we suffering? Stress. So because man has found out so many different luxuries for the body, then Maya is thinking, oh, he's escaping from the superficial physical problems of life. Okay, let me put on, makes man more crazy and people go for committing suicide. So we have not escaped pain, we have only allowed Maya to give the pain in a different form, which is even more severe. So we should not be fooled by the so-called comforts offered by science. If Vedic authority is superior, why not many places to teach Vedas? On the other hand, in many institutions for teaching science and engineering. You see, in a classroom, how many people get distinction in your college? Majority get or minority get? Just a handful. Maybe 5 people may get distinction out of 100 people. You don't go and criticize them. See, you are minority, we are majority. You don't criticize them. Distinction is very difficult to achieve, and majority would be mediocre, so they can't achieve it. Similarly, Vedic knowledge requires X-ray vision to understand what life is all about, to see through the body and learn to perceive there is a soul in this body. Vimudanana Vashyanti, Vashyanti Jnana Chakshusha. Krishna says, cannot see the soul, but wise people can. So wise people are less in number. So this world is called as a fool's paradise. In a fool's paradise, certainly fools will be majority. And certainly they will study things pertaining to the body and matter. Naturally they will not be studying about the soul. That's why we want to try our best to turn the fools into wise people. That is the mission of ISKCON. Prabhupada took sannyas and went to America. Why? To turn the fools into wise people. Certainly everyone can become wise by associating with the wise. It's possible. Even if one is grossly foolish, like Krishna says, Namam Dushkritano Mudha, those who are grossly foolish, even they can become wise if they associate with Mahatmas. So suddenly societies like ISKCON are endeavoring to reach this message to as many people as possible with the best of the communications possible. So we are doing that, and we are finding that one man lecture of Prabhupada has brought about such a radical change in the whole world. Then so many followers of Prabhupada, we can imagine in coming 100 years how much ISKCON will progress. Suddenly this knowledge will be taken far and wide. You think people are attracted to ISKCON classes because M.Tech from IIT and professor from EIT is giving lectures. Nothing wrong in that. This is why people get generally attracted. And these things can be ultimately used for glorifying God. Why not? What's the problem? It is true, as this person has written, that people, if somebody is very wise in the Vedas, people don't respect them in the modern times. What is the reason? The reason is people just don't know what the Vedas are all about. They just don't know. In Vedic times, the Vedic followers, those who are true Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, who knew the Vedas, who knew about soul and God, they were greatly respected. Please do not mistake me for saying this. According to Vedic times, those who are doing iron and steel industry, they were actually blacksmiths. So engineers were considered blacksmiths and goldsmiths in the Vedic times. See, what do you do in a smithy laboratory? You put a, take a tong and take a rod and put it in the fire and take it out and heat it, isn't it? That's what you do. Smith. Goldsmith. If you were studying it in a book, like, you know, workshop technology, like, you know, you can give a nice name, you know. Nowadays they give technology for anything. Simply fishery technology. All his studies are about fishes. Fire engineering, mining engineering, so many things have come up now. So, you just add technology and it looks very attractive. And you make a big study about some insignificant thing as grass. You just take one grass and you study all the details about the grass, cytoplasm, protoplasm, nucleus and all details about it. It's not the after that. So, in the Vedic times, because people understood the goal of life, they respected those who knew about God and soul and the purpose of life. Modern times, certainly, see, if people don't know the education, qualification of a person, they might not respect at all. Because they think these people are fools. They're sentimentalists. They are just, following the age-old tradition of the Vedas. They have no stuff. So they are thinking, such a glamour, the modern times, that people become bewildered saying that. The superficial show is so great that anybody can become bewildered by that. So one just has to have the intelligence to remove that veneer, the covering, and see through and understand what is there inside. So people don't see that, they just don't have the vision because they're blinded. As I told you, lollipop is there in their hand. So you don't mind even if somebody steals $1 million from you. So what I meant was that one can become free from all suffering, completely, and be with God. That opportunity is stripped off from you and you are pushed by catching your neck into the so-called comforts of the modern life, which makes you think we are very great with all these facilities. So, it's a very unfortunate situation that people respect only M.Techs and B.Techs and PhDs and professors working in VIT like that. But over a period of time, like even all of you, you must have respected somebody holding a big degree in the beginning when you came. But then what happens over a period of time? When your respect for the person is not due to his degree, but due to his spiritual status, due to the spiritual integrity a person has. So actually our respect will shift from this to that. It's very natural as one advances in spiritual life. Because you become more wise. You understand that simply the degree doesn't make a person. What makes a person is actually his spiritual integrity. Has anybody got the power to treat AIDS in Kali Yuga by Vedas? No. Can be done only by science. Who is this person who can treat AIDS by science? No, we should highlight him. He's saying it can be done only by science, he's saying. If anybody knows that this person can cure AIDS by science, he'll become very famous. He'll become richer than Bill Gates. And he can cure that. Nobody has found any cure for AIDS. As I said, even in the Vedic times also, those who indulge in illicit sex would die. There are people who have died even in Vedic times. Because it's one of the rules by God, no illicit sex. One matravat paradareshu. You should treat everyone else like every other woman other than one's wife, like your mother. Then why should the Vedas give a solution to AIDS? Ayurveda doesn't give that. Why should it give? If the Ayurveda is giving solution to AIDS, that means it's promoting that you can enjoy with any number of women you want, which the Vedas are not promoting. See, this goes to show how the Vedas are so pakka in their information. What information they give, it is so much matching. So Vedas don't want a man to enjoy with different prostitutes and get AIDS like this. So, it can be done by modern scientists saying, I don't know how it is. Saurav can find out who is this boy who can cure AIDS and take him to PM of India. And DNA from cancer cells will be used to avoid problem of old age. Because these cure him for this, make him live for some more time. See, this is one of the most recent technologies called stem cells. That, so you all know cloning, isn't it? Cloning, you take, you remove the nucleus and you replace it. So by cloning, they are making children, which will be apparently children in future. But they don't allow this tissue to grow to a full child. They stop it at a particular point. And they terminate it and they remove that future child, which is going to become a child, remove that. And then use the tissues of the child to replace some diseased portions of another man, living man. And for example, there are some diseases which can be treated by this kind of stem cells. So there was an article in Back to God, it also about the stem cells. There are many articles coming about the stem cells. There is no assurance given that your old age can be stopped. It's utter foolishness to think that old age is being stopped. Just like facelift, we say, you know, you put all the wrinkled skin like this, and then you look young. It is like that only. Artificially can suppress old age, but actually internally you are growing old. And the one which is written DNA in says what he's talking about, this is not for curing old age, this is for curing other diseases. If somebody in old age has any diseases, this is meant for curing it. Nobody has ever found a mechanism by which the old age can be stopped. Of course, it's a whole mechanism, how man is getting old. There was an article in Indian Express which explains, scientists know how the aging process, how a person gets old, how the living cells become dead. So the mechanism is known. But scientists also say that we can just watch at this mechanism happening. We have no control over it. It cannot be controlled. I can show that article. There was an article about it. Actually, stopping the old age and stopping disease and stopping death is not something new. Right from time immemorial, man has been trying for this. But these are laws of the material world. Okay, you can prolong the life of a person. Like, you know, if a man's average age is 70, you can prolong it up to, say, 80 or 90. One may live longer. But one can never stop death. Because you may stop one disease, but it will appear in another form. A very short statement somebody has made. Science proves things. But the other thing is, Vedas don't prove things. That's the point he's trying to make. It's not that science proves everything. Science proves something very petty. There are many petty things that are proved by science. Majority of the things are not proved by science. You may show some small experiment in a laboratory and prove something. But the most important truths of life have never been proved. Like the Darwin's evolution theory has never been proved in the laboratory. You cannot show a link between an ape and a human being. But then, such theories are going on in the school textbooks as gospel truths and read by children. And the origin of universe cannot be proved. They can never show how the universe came from any point, infinitesimal point of infinite temperature, infinite density. All this is simply concoction. Actually, science begins with speculation, if you see. Anything in science you take, first there is a speculation, which they very decently call it as hypothesis. So hypothesis is a more decent name of speculation. So you hypothesize something. And after hypothesizing, you have to prove it experimentally. Even all the calculations, even the rotation of the different planets and the position of different planets, all these things are all affirmed by the astronomers, not based on watching them, but simply based on mathematical calculations. That's all. See, when you say mathematical calculation, two negatives make a positive, two positives make a positive, isn't it? Similarly, sometimes two mistakes can also lead you to one answer which is coming from once I was solving a problem, the answer came in two steps only. Actually, you are supposed to take four pages. There was a committed mistake. So answer came in two steps. By an accident. Then I realized the mistake. When I rectified the mistake, then I had to do four pages to arrive at the answer. Similarly, we can see that all the theories which need proof are not proved. Like, for example, law of thermodynamics. Is there anyone here who has seen a perpetual motion machine? PMF? Is there anyone here? It is simply a theory in paper. It can never be proved. because perpetual motion machine works without any energy. So this is the first law of thermodynamics. And the third law of thermodynamics, the entropy of the universe is increasing. All those things, the entropy of a perfect crystal at absolute zero is zero. These are no proof. These are all theories which are recorded in your college books, and you study it, you cram it, and you vomit it in the exam, so that later on you'll get a degree. So these are not just one or two, we can say hundreds of them. See, you say a field and we can talk of a theory. You talk of a field, any field of science or engineering or technology, immediately there are many, many things that are assumed there. So it is presented as if science is proving everything. It is simply a imagination that science proves everything. Why people feel that science is proving everything? Because science has offered us comforts. There are things which science is showing in front of your eyes, like you have a computer, you have an electronic printer, you have a TV, you have vehicles, any things that science has given us in our everyday life, where they have used the basic principles, like a motor. Like one motor was invented, then you can invent 100 other things with motor. Once you have a motor, then you can make an engine and use it for a killer. If one goes to the fundamentals, the principles are very simple. That is why one has to, if you are a scientist, then you can understand the deficiency of science better than a novice in a village. Like for example, the electronic engineer, he will never be fascinated by the printer and the computer and things like that. Because he knows if you have a microprocessor, if you have ever worked on a microprocessor, with the programming you can simply operate servo motors in X axis, Y axis, Z axis and different accelerating. There are so many things that could be done. So they find one basic principle and you can find 1,000 appliances to that. And when people see the 1,000 appliances, they become like children who are given a lollipop again. Oh, science is doing wonders, miracles. What miracle have they done? Just one basic principle, you can find 1,000 appliances. Just one principle of running a motor, you can find thousands of things like that. They all look different for you because you are ignorant. They look different for you. The principle is very simple. But what is most essential to be proved, they have not proved. How is my grandfather a monkey? They have not showed that. How do you say that my forefathers are monkeys? There is no proof for that. Now I have an article with me which shows that monkeys are monkeys and human beings are humans. This is only one scientist. Of course, among scientists also there are, amongst people who are working on the field of evolution, there are two classes of people. Creationists and evolutionists. So both are scientists. The creationists argue that everything was created by some superior intelligence. And the evolutionists argue that everything evolved. So this fight is an ongoing fight in the field of science. And it is going on and on. But because all of your intelligence, in our third book will be coming up with articles which you read. If you read carefully, you can very decisively, scientifically understand that there you can be 100% sure that your ancestors were never monkeys. Your ancestors were the most wise men. They were the wisest of men. Like Swayambhu Manu. Such great souls. Also, if science is proving things, we can also prove that the Vedas are also proving many things. Vedas also show many things that can be proven. Here we apply the same philosophy what we apply to science. In science you have a hypothesis, and after hypothesis you have a experiment, and after experiment there is observation, and there is a result, and you compare and do everything. Similarly, in our Krishna consciousness movement also, we have the accusation too, being a crude man, who is a drug addict, who is drinking liquor, who is smoking cigarette. And 2004, you find him a blissful devotee. Another 2 years, wearing tilak and chanting and dancing, his complete philosophy of his life is changed. The way he speaks is different, the way he behaves is different, his goals are different. And such an unclean person becomes so clean, like the hippies were converted to happies by Prabhupada. So this process works, and it can be seen with one's own eyes. If one puts faith in eyes, you see with your own eyes people how it is transforming people. And besides that, all the truth said by Vedas, like the plants of life. We have given many examples in our books. So you read all these examples. Sometimes the Vedas say something which may appear to be wrong according to scientists, but later on scientists will come back to the same point, what the Vedas say. And we can quote several evidences for that. There are so many things for them. Recently I read an article on fire bacteria. Again, there was a second or third article in the magazine about they're saying that in Arctic and Antarctica there are springs which have boiling water, high temperature, boiling. It turns into steam. In such places bacteria are existing. So there was an article called What Happens at 666 degree Fahrenheit. There was an article by some scientists. So there are many things said in the Vedas that there is life on fire also, which is now proved by scientists, which was thought by scientists to be false before and it's being proved. So we can easily observe from our studies that science said something they are proving, but then later on they proved what they said earlier to be false. And they are now stating another thing to be true. It keeps on changing. But the Vedas said something, and we can perceive many of them, like the plants and things. Plants are Vedas of life. There are many experiments which are connected to Jagdish Chandra Bose, isn't it? Which proved that the plants have life. And the Vedic truths, there is another point. The Vedic truths are accepted as axiomatic truths. Like one man came to Prabhupada. He said, "Is there any scope of doubt, Swamiji, in your Vedic truths?" Prabhupada immediately spoke back. He said, "No." He said, "You have doubt because you have no faith in Krishna. You have no faith in Krishna's words." Prabhupada said, "First step is assume this equation. Let us assume that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So Prabhupada said, accept this as an axiom. And then, based on this axiom, we can understand everything else. Gradually. That is why in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, at least one should theoretically accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Also, Prabhupada explains, it's not that we have no scope of doubts in the scriptures. Otherwise, why the Bhagavad Gita is full of question and answer between Arjuna and Krishna? Why is Arjuna asking questions? So and this is Maitreya, all are conversing. But you will find one thing interesting in the Vedic questions. Arjuna is asking, Katamaita Pijaniya Tomaro Praktavaniti, my dear Krishna. Krishna, you are saying that you gave the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to Vivaswan, but how am I to understand it? Because Vivaswan is senior by birth to you. So what it means is, Krishna, whatever you are saying is true, but I am unable to understand it. Katamaita Pijaniya, how can I understand it? But the scientific approach is not like that. It's just the opposite. What is the approach? Scientists, you see the way they fight while they write the international papers. One scientist will say, Prabhupada once gave an example of the scientist fighting, you know that? He said, somebody said it can be cut only with a knife. So he said like this. Another one said it can be cut only with a scissor. He said like this. So the fight went on. He said, scissor. He said, knife. He said, scissor. Knife. Scissor. Knife. Fight went on. Another person became so angry, he threw this person into the neighborhood river from the top. And the fellow went into the river, he was drowning, but his hand was out like this, feeling, Sisar, his hand was shouting. Similarly, scientists simply hold on to some argument and in order to prove it, go on trying to give evidences. Like I was saying, Darwin's theory, in order to prove it, they give hundreds and thousands of this skull and that skull, maybe this is close, maybe that is close, but nothing comes close. Monkeys are monkeys, human beings are humans. So if you see, thousands and thousands of fossils, they are somehow trying to bring them close to prove his theory. But simply by giving volumes and volumes of work, he can bewilder the ignorant people of the world. He can bewilder the masses, but the wise will never be bewildered. So such kind of huge volumes of information cannot be considered proofs. So the basic truths of life have no proof about how life came about. There is no answer to the question. If you see what the scientist says about, see, at least Darwin was more wiser than the neo-Darwins. See, Neo-Darwinian theory has come now, recently. So Neo-Darwinians are saying that we don't accept Darwin, but we have a Neo-Darwinian theory. We have proposed a new theory now. What is it? Darwin said the absolute truth, the supreme creator, must have breathed out one of the living forms, from which later on the other forms must have evolved. At least he said like this. This is the first statement he makes in his book, Origin of Species. But the Neo-Darwinists, they say, you know what is their proposal, what is their understanding about how life came about? They say there was a, in the dawn of creation, there was an ocean, and there was a sand. It was normal sand, it was normal ocean. And then in the sky, there was lightning and thunder. And then the thunder claps fell, when thunder fell into the waters, it was ordinary waters. So that's why either on the sand or on the water you don't see anything moving, because nothing was living at that time. But then when the thunder fell on the water, something started moving within the waters. So this is how the first life came, according to them. So further, and then afterwards, although it was in water, it was swimming, swimming in water gradually, and then later on it thought that let me go to the land, and jumped out of water. Then because he has to now move on land, he started growing legs. Sorry, he started walking on land. And in this way, after walking on land for a long time, the bear came, you know, the bear, polar bear, bear, he came. And once the bear was searching for some eatable, and he couldn't get. But he found there were many flies, which were on the top of the surface of the ocean. So he entered into the waters and started opening his mouth wide open and chasing those flies to eat them. Some of them he ate, again he opened his mouth and he ate. And then he had to keep his mouth wide open because the flies were flying too far away. And he kept his mouth so open and so big that he turned into a whale. This is the theory of whale, huh? Isn't it, Saurabh? This is from Darwin's book, Origin of Species, if you see. How the evolution took place. How the catfish, from water it came into the land, and how the bear entered from land, entered into the waters, and again turned into a whale. Like that. We can say many more things like that. So these are even worse than the stories that are put forth by Rudyard Kipling. You heard of Rudyard Kipling stories? Rudyard Kipling says stories that, you know, how the elephant got a long nose, you know. You know, the crocodile was pulling him, pulling him, pulling him, he got a long nose. So it's a story like this. So scientists are no less to tell such stories. We are saying a similar story about the giraffe. How the giraffe got... Actually, I read a very deep analysis about giraffe. Because scientists have taken these words of the later scientists, they have taken these words seriously and they have researched also. They have taken out the fossils of giraffe and they are saying, if the giraffe extended his neck longer and longer and then he approached the tree and he got something to eat and then he survived, why did they not put the neck down? See, they were able to put the neck down to drink water. Then they could also have eaten carrots and beetroots and everything from the ground. So why did they have to have a long neck to catch the things there? So they have asked these questions, but then they have no answers, so they left it in between. So we are publishing all these things in our new book that's coming up. So you can read this and you can have more fun of things that are proved by scientists. So these things are never proved. Yes, of course, it is true that these are false. It is true that the theory is false. But there is no proof that the theory is true. I think I cannot go beyond 5 minutes. I think it's already going to be 9:30. I can take some interesting questions. King follows the Vedas, fight among themselves. He's saying this is an interesting point. There are many other points, but he thought of taking this point. Actually, it is true. What he's saying is true. There are six great philosophers. They come together and they arrive at no conclusion. There is Kanada, there is Jaimini, there is atheistic Kapila. Even in the Vedic times, there were philosophers who were mental speculators. Nasir Prabhupada told the Westerners, don't think only you got atheists. Even they also got atheists in the Vedic times. He told about the Charvak Rishi and Charvak Muni. There was Charvak Muni who said, Masmin Bhutasya Dehasya Kudak Punaragamana Bhavet. He said, once his body is dead and gone, who knows what's going to happen after death. Whether I'm going to leave this body and go to another body, am I a soul of the body? Just enjoy life, he said. So, the Vedic times also there were people who were argumentative and they had no faith in God. There were atheists also in the ancient times. And they used Sanskrit to deny God. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Asatyam Appadishtam Te Jagadagura Nishwaram Aparaspara Sambhutam Kyamanit Kama Hitukam. He is saying that there are, my dear Arjuna, there are people who tell that Asatyam Appadishtam Te, this world has no foundation. Jagadagura Anishwaram. They say there is no God. There is no God in control. And everything is happening automatically. So Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. When I read in Bhagavad Gita, I was very surprised. How did Krishna know about the modern scientists? Modern scientists are coming to come out with Big Bang Theory, which says everything came from some tiny point. How did Krishna know it? But Krishna says that not only for the modern scientists, but for all people. Even in the ancient times, there were people like that. There were fights. But there were genuine Vedic followers who are coming in parampara, these four sampradayas. They have no quarrel. It is said, Muni is a person who always speculates about the absolute truth himself by using his own limited intelligence. That is why no two Munis can live together. Not possible. As soon as they come, there will be a big sound, fighting will be there. Just like scientists are fighting with one another. So Munis also fight with one another. But there is somebody called a Chittadhir Muni. Like Narada Muni, we say, he is a Chittadhir Muni. Chittadhir Muni is one who has gone beyond the stage of all fighting and quarreling and arrived at a stage where he has understood the absolute truth in parampara thoroughly. So he has no fight. So the Vedic truth, there is no ambiguity or there is no fight once a person accepts the parampara and follows it. Actually, this point also is very important. I just like answering few sentences. He says Vedas talk of any mythological things, like he is saying, when Anantashesha moves, then there will be earthquake. And when Rahu Ketu, something happens to Rahu and Ketu, then there is eclipse. So these are questions often asked by people. It's not, the Vedas don't say that the earth is situated on Anantashesha. It doesn't say that. The Vedas say that all the universes are emanating from the body of Mahavishnu. And then after having emanated, all the Brahmandas are situated on the hoods of Anantashesha, in which Mahavishnu lies. So all the Brahmandas are situated on the hoods of Anantashesha, just like jewels are situated on the hoods of serpents. Ananta is an expansion of Balaram. And Balaram is the one who holds all the universes, all the Brahmandas in that place, and also gives a gravitational pull between all the objects of this world. Like we have the gravitational pull by which all the planets are maintained in their orbits. So this kind of power is, the Shakti is actually supplied by Ananta, by the Lord. Okay, if you want to say that Lord Ananta in the form of Ananta Shesh is not holding all the Brahmandas, then all the Brahmandas, how are all the universes created and how are they sustained and how are they annihilated? Where is the answer? We have no answer. But the Vedas are saying the answer. Somebody may say, okay, just because we don't know the answer, it doesn't mean we have to accept the Vedas. Some people argue like that. Okay, you don't accept the Vedas. How we accept it? Again, the question of credibility comes. Like sometimes the scientists say certain things in which you put faith, and then they say bombastic things, big things, which cannot be proved. And then you put faith in that also. Like a scientist says, there are 5 billion stars in the sky. You accept, okay, yes, there are 5 billion stars. How are you going to count it? Actually, such things are arrived at only by statistics and probability, which is highly improbable. So we put faith in that. Like that. Similarly, they say, 500 million light years away, there is one star we have found out. God knows how they went 500 million light years away. What kind of telescope they had to go 500 million. One light year is, one light, what is one light year? One light year is the distance traveled by light in a period of one full year. What can I talk of 500 million light years away? When I put my hand in a bucket, when there is water, the bottom appears here, It appears near. So I cannot even understand that the bottom of the bucket is actually down. It is so near to me, I can't even see that. But I am seeing something 500 million light years away. Yeah, I'll try to put faith in that. So that how we have put faith in scientists, because they tell us something that we can immediately perceive. And then having developed faith in that, what we do? Then we put faith in everything they say. Similarly, in the Vedas also, there are many things said, like for example, reincarnation. What the Vedas say, scientists are proving it. Narrative experience, we see so many things. Yes, that means I'm not a body, I'm reborn. What the Vedas are saying is becoming true. So this way, gradually your faith in Vedas develop more and more, and you understand how God exists, how soul exists, how there is certainly law of karma. You understand all these things, and then when the Vedas say that when Mahavishnu creates all the universes from his body, then he places them on the hoods of Ananta, Ananta Shesh, who holds them to keep them in that place. And then he provides them the Shakti so that all the planets can revolve around it. So we don't have much difficulty to accept it. Similarly, Rahu and Ketu eclipse time, the Vedas say there is an invisible planet called Rahu, which comes between the Earth and the Moon, and he is the one who arrests it. See, now, sometimes the Vedas talk of allegorical things. Like, you know, it's not that the Rahu is like a snake and he goes and catches a planet and he engulfs it. This is actually allegory. The Rahu planet hides the moon planet. So that is actually explained with the allegory of such an example. We can show many such allegories in the Vedas where it can be proved. Just like Narada Muni tells Puranjan allegorical story. There are many, many things that he says there. And Vedas also, there are many things that are symbolized. Symbolized means, in order to explain thing, you symbolize it. Social body, we say. Social body doesn't exactly, there is no one human being who signifies a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, everything. It's a social body. It's allegory. Similarly, allegories are given. Now, the Rahu planet is called as an invisible planet. So how are you going to detect it? But Vedas say it exists. And Prabhupada talked about moon landing. Prabhupada said, even if somebody has landed on some other planet, it's likely that they must have landed in Rahu, once Prabhupada said. If they have really landed on some other planet, they might have landed on Rahu. He said, Rahu cannot be, it's not a visible planet, but it is also a matter, it's gross matter. So how it operates, how it blocks the moon, how it causes the eclipse, you can go deeper and try to understand how it does it. Certainly, there are shastras which explain more deeply about it. So we have a particular understanding, but the understanding is purely based on logic. See, as I told you, all things in astronomy are purely based on mathematics and logic. Like for example, what about Arctic and Antarctica? No, there cannot be life there. Why? Because it is frozen. There cannot be life. Everything is ice there. And the temperature is so low that there cannot be any life that can survive there. This is how scientists conclude. And they go there and see life form is existing. How? So it makes you a fool. It defeats your logic. Similarly, Shastra says many things that defeat our logic. We don't know. With our existing logic, we may not know. But then as you get deeper into Shastra, probably you can understand if somebody researches on this. Like there is a book written comparing Vedas and science. He says in that in Mahabharata, Bhishma Pitamaha is teaching Arjun about aiming an arrow. In that he has given the value of theta. What is the value of theta? The angle, pi. The value of pi. What is the value of pi? So this 22/7, this value is given there in Mahabharata. So he uses it in one of the archery calculations. If you read, it is in one of the parvas. So you can go and read that. Now, it's not that Vedic people, we go and have a fight with Pythagoras. You have stolen from the Vedas and you are giving it. We already said it. You don't say that. But you can see many things like that in the Vedas. There are many, many things. So what we are talking about the Vedas is a very superficial knowledge. How much have we gone deep into it? Even in Mahabharata, there are so many things to be known. What is take up the regular Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda? If somebody is really keen, there are institutes which are researching in this field. Recently I got a pamphlet when I went to IIT Kharagpur from an institute which is going deep into the Vedas and coming out with many wonderful things. See, what we speak in ISKCON about the greatness of Vedas is an insignificant speck. There are many institutes, like there is a Gayatri Institute, who work, they conduct research into the Vedas, the Vedic truths. And they are also bringing out truths and they are proving it, like they have made a hall. They have made a hall in the north, they made an auditorium where you don't need a mic. It's a huge auditorium which can carry about 10,000 people. And you speak there, the auditorium is designed according to the Vedic design. In Pune also, there is a girl in Pune, one Vashasha, who was, she was showing her project and I had gone to Bombay to all of our Bombay team. So she showed the Gurukula, how they had made Gurukula. In 10 acres they have made a Gurukula. So she had taken a 10 acre land and made the Gurukula and shown. It has got so many facilities. It has got an amphitheater where you speak and thousands of people can hear you. And you don't need any mic system there. So the design is like that. We don't know what kind of system they have made. So in our ISKCON, we haven't gone so deep into the research, but there are institutes whose help we can seek if you want to know more about how the Vedic truths are being practically shown in the modern times. It's not just everything is in theory, we are talking something, some stuff high up in the air that which cannot be proved. Many, many things are now. Now, why is the modern man going back to the organic food? You know that? Now, organic food is more costly than what is being sold in the cities now. Like, you know, you get a potato from the marketplace, it's damn cheap, but you want an organic potato. You know the name of organic potato? Yeah, no fertilizers, no this thing, natural potato, that is more costly. In fact, for putting fertilizers, you have to spend so much money. Still, it is less costly. Why? Because just like this black and white photograph has become obsolete now, it's replaced by color photograph now. But you go to the market now, black and white photo is more costly now than the color one. So that the organic things are becoming more costly because man has gone so far away from nature. Now again he is coming back. He has gone higher than thinking of happy, happy, happy. Frustrated, coming down again. Go back to natural life again. Going back to organic and things are becoming very costly now. It appears to me that someday the Ayurvedic people, doctors, will become like allopathic doctors and allopathic doctors will become like Ayurvedic doctors. What I meant was, nowadays Ayurvedic people are making tablets which look exactly like allopathic tablets. Like we are also getting strips now. Anywhere you go, you are getting Ayurvedic tablet strips. These are becoming so common because people know these are harmless. You take it, it cures you. Or if it doesn't cure you immediately, it doesn't cause any harm to you. It's all made of herbs and things like that. It only adds to your system and makes it better like that. So man is coming back to nature again. So in this way, there is no mythology. The word mythology was coined by the Indologists who came to India. Mythology means a myth which is not true. But the Vedas are not talking about something not true, they are talking about itihasa. Itihasa means history. Itihasa is not mythology. Anyway, for us, something may look mythology because we have no ability to perceive things at our stage. I was giving the example, if you remember, like an ant on the top of a ceiling. For him, all of your existence is mythology. For him, if he's existing on the top of a... What will he know? All he knows is there are long, long sticks this way, zigzag this way and that way. And there are some bright bulbs put up there. He doesn't know anything beyond that. But then for him, the reality, just like the frog in the well, that's our condition. Similarly, the reality that is said in the Vedas is not immediately perceivable. But one who sincerely accepts the Vedic teachings and follows, gradually all things said in the Vedas will be perceived as reality. One can get that perception, it's possible. See, it all depends on how much faith one has developed. Faith, either in the scientific authority or in the Vedic authority. In conclusion, I would like to make this point that we have to put faith in some authority. So take the Vedic authority, take the scientific authority. So if you go to the scientific authority, scientifically you can prove that science is subjected to four defects. Correct? And science keeps changing. And it doesn't tell you absolute truth. All the truths in science are relative. And they don't know whether absolute truth exists. About the goal of life, because for them there is no goal, it's all simply molecular interaction. There is no goal, there is no purpose, there is no meaning, then there is no creator, or they say we just don't know, that's all. And this is the field of science. On the other hand, if you accept, this is the Vedas. Vedas are giving knowledge where the Vedas themselves say it is not subject to four defects. The proof is, we are seeing that many of the Vedic truths said millions of years ago are proved to be true in the modern times. Like reincarnation, which was thought of to be mythological once upon a time, now is being proved by scientists to be true. That yes, that is reincarnation. So the Vedic truths have stood the test of time. and the Vedas are giving you a formula, and they are saying that if you follow the formula, you will achieve perfection in life. So it's for the individual to decide which one they want to accept. Of course, you can accept science and have flickering comforts and remain in darkness throughout the life, grow up in the dark, thinking that I am this body and I have all the comforts, let me enjoy life to the fullest ability possible, and then die a disappointed death. One can do that. But if one is wise, then one will certainly painstakingly try to understand what these Vedas have got to say. Personally, in my life, although I studied science and technology and engineering, everything, at one stage I was convinced that science can lead me nowhere. It is simply leading me into an abysmal, a bottomless hole. It cannot give me anything that will bring me completely convinced at that point. So it was suddenly a question for me, okay, now I am at this point, what next? If you see science, then the Vedas have got to say something. Let us try to understand what they are saying. So you don't have to blindly accept. That is why Prabhupada says, no blind following and no absurd inquiry. Don't make absurd inquiry, which is useless. But at the same time, don't follow blindly. You ask question, understand, and keep a firm foot. And then take one more step and keep ahead. And then ask question, understand, and put your foot firm there. And then take another step. So it's a step-by-step realization. And other shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anatana vritti, nishtha, ruchi, rati, bhava, prema. Ultimately one will come to the stage of achieving prema for Krishna, Krishna prema. So this is science. You see, from earlier you had a tiny shraddha, now you have got more desire for sadhu sangha, associating with devotees. Then you do bhajana kriya, and then all your anathas can go out of your heart, you can see them getting out of your heart. What kind of man you are and what kind of man you are, you can see that for yourself. And then nishtha will come, deep-rooted bhakti, loving attraction for Krishna will come. So these things are bound to happen as one advances. One can see it for oneself. So in my own personal spiritual life, I observed that like milestones are there. Like if somebody tells you from Pune station how to come to Kunjivari temple, there are four milestones. One is at Amar Hotel, then there is Sadhu Asani Chowk, then here there is a petrol bank, then there is Chowpati, and then there is temple. So even if you clear just two or three milestones, will you not get more convinced? Even if you clear just two milestones, somebody said Amar Hotel will come, you see the hotel Amar, you are convinced. Then you see Sadhu Asani Chowk, second thing is that is also true. And then you come little at petrol bank, now you are convinced, yes. Now although I have not reached the temple, I am convinced that I am very soon going to reach the temple. Because whatever they say is becoming true. So, in the same day, you can see in the Vedic truths, they are not seeing Krishna face to face. We can't, in our stage. But then, there are so many intermediate milestones which are happening in our own lives. We can practically see with our own eyes. We can perceive in our own bodies, in our own hearts happening. Which give us a deep conviction, yes, Vedas only must be true. Krishna is God, and we will develop loving attraction for Him very soon, depending on how much faith we develop and how much dedication we show. Hare Krishna. So, will we keep them 5 minutes? So, there are still some questions which I didn't answer, maybe some other time. Is there any more questions? Maybe we can take one more week for answering. Or the other devotees can answer next week. So, if you have your questions, you can write more questions if you have.
Kibadakshi Nithai 上让你个扎扎扎扎你爸爸的呀神狗的山是拉斯那的呀山爸爸鸡呀神狗呀山拉斯那丁哈达尼Aroti kolena Brahma Adideva Gani Kibanaya Pariyari Kari Shamaradulaya Kibanara Hari Hari Kari Shamaradulaya Go Shadi Gaya Shankha Bajje Ganta Bajje Bajje Karasala Shiva Shankha Kanta Bache Bache Karatala Mathura Mirdanga Bache Paramaratala Madhu 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 Bhaje Madhu 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 Bhaje Madhu 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 Bhaje Hey Madhu 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 Bhaje Madhu 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 Bhaje Bhaje, Kanta Bhaje, Madhur 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 Bhaje, Kanta Bhaje, Kanta Bhaje, Madhur 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 Bhaje, Kanta Bhaje, Kanta Bhaje, Madhur 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 Bhaje. Madhu 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 Bhaje madhu madhu paale